Sometimes you just want the quick facts. No opinions, no speculation. I'm Claire Thornton, an audio editor with USA Today. My team works around the clock to bring you the Five Things podcast. Every morning, me and my co-host Taylor Wilson help you know what to keep an eye out for that day. We always have a fresh mix of stories, from politics to entertainment to sports, covering all parts of the country. On Sundays, you can lean back with in-depth episodes about stories you may have heard earlier that week. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows and start listening to Five Things today.
Inside Florida Politics, powered by the USA Today Florida Network. Florida holds a very anticlimactic GOP presidential primary. The state seems increasingly uncompetitive in presidential elections, and Moms for Liberty continues to have clout here. Hello, I'm USA Today campaign reporter Zach Anderson, and those are some of the stories I'll be discussing this week with Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. But first, and we just finished the presidential primary election here in Florida, and it was absolutely meaningless. Trump clinched the nomination a few weeks ago, but there might be some interesting numbers floating around there right now. What do you have for us today, John?
Zach, I'm here with an even dozen. I've got a 12.
All right. How about you, Antonio?
You know what? I'm going to go a little bit lower than last week. I'm coming in with 23.
23. All right. Some low numbers here this week. I'm going to go high with 1,358. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, Floridians finally got their turn to vote in the GOP presidential primary, but their votes won't matter because Trump already clinched the nomination. Antonio, is there anything we can learn from these results at all? Anything about Trump's strength? He wasn't the only name on the ballot this week.
No, but you know what? Like you said earlier, it turned out to be anticlimactic. I was thinking back to a year ago at this time. We were looking to this, this world wrestling type federation cage match between Trump and DeSantis.
The two Goliaths of not just Florida politics, but national politics. Trump and DeSantis didn't that showdown never got to Florida.
No, it fizzled in January when DeSantis dropped out and endorsed Trump, and then Trump even retired. The Ron DeSanctimonious nickname back then is a measure of good faith.
I don't know if it fizzled. I think it froze to death in Iowa with sub-zero temperatures.
Well, for you, because you were there. For us down here in the warmth of Florida, it just kind of fizzled. But, you know, the interesting thing about this primary, and, you know, first give Trump credit where credit is due. He's won three straight Florida primaries. That's a record. He's angling now to win Florida for three consecutive presidential elections, and he has completely taken over and rebranded and restructured and whatever you want, adjective you want to use or verb you want to use, the Republican Party, not just in Florida, but across the country. Now, the interesting thing, though, about yesterday's results is that in winning this third straight primary, he did it with his lowest vote total of all three. In 2016, he had a little bit over a million votes. In 2020, he had, even with the pandemic descending on us, he still had a little bit over 1,100,000 votes. And with just a fraction of a percent or more left to count here, he's at 910,000 votes here in 2024. And the interesting question now is those Nikki Haley voters, 155,000 plus Florida Republicans cast their votes for Nikki Haley, almost 14% of the vote. And, you know, in previous elections, particularly 2016, where Trump only had 45% of the vote, and then you had Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz and others splitting the other, almost half the votes, the other half of the votes counted. But the fact of the matter is, in November 2016, they all came home to Trump. All those Florida voters fell in line and voted for Trump for the most part of the Republicans. And the question now is, are these Nikki Haley voter, Republican voters, are they never Trumpers? Can they be persuaded? That's really an open question. And maybe it's not enough to swing Florida to the Democrats. I mean, they're sort of You know, Nikki Fried yesterday was saying, well, don't count us out. I don't know about that. I think even without the Nikki Haley voters, probably Trump wins Florida comfortably in November anyways. But the pattern is clear in other states, in Michigan and in Georgia and in other states where, you know, Haley has pulled in large swaths of Republican voters. And if they stay away from Trump in November, that could be trouble for him.
Yeah. And, you know, Florida, it's a little bit different because the race was completely decided by the time that we actually had Election Day. Although when voting started, when absentee of voting started, I believe Haley was still in the race. So it was still a somewhat meaningful race. And some people have been piling on Ron DeSantis and noting that Nikki Haley beat Ron DeSantis, but DeSantis dropped off well before voting started, whereas was Haley dropped out later. So it makes sense that she would get a higher vote total than him because votes for her actually mattered when some of this early voting started. But, you know, there was the percentage that Haley got in Florida was smaller than some of the other states when this was still competitive. You know, I think there were some states where she got north of 40% in New Hampshire, in South Carolina, she got around 40. I think in Utah, she got around 40. She actually won Vermont and the District of Columbia. So it is interesting to see, even after this race is decided, that people are still voting for Haley. And even though she was still in the race when voting started, absentee voting started in Florida, I mean, pretty much everybody knew that that Trump had this wrapped up. So these really are protest votes, right? And it's a big question as to whether or not they come home to Trump. I mean, 2016, 2020, 2024 is different. I mean, there's a lot there where people who are voting against Trump at this point really probably don't like him.
Yeah, you know, and I think to a large measure, I think that the whole issue of the 3% or more that DeSantis got it isn't so much a factor because ideologically, DeSantis and Trump are sort of in the same lane. They're in that hard right, MAGA, you know, far right camp. The Haley voters tend to be much more moderate Republicans. And quite frankly, Trump himself has had a lot of harsh words about so-called moderate Republicans, calling them rhinos, that he doesn't want them in the party. At one point, he threatened anybody who gave Nikki Haley money, they wouldn't be accepted as donors in his camp. So, and then when Haley said, look, it's not up to really me to endorse Trump. It's up to him to win over these voters that chose me in these primaries.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to have done much to do that.
No. In fact, he railed against it. So it is not an MO here in the Trump side to seek a bigger tent or forget the big tent, just even maybe a little pup tent bigger or a little, you know, an illegal, highly efficiency addition to, you know, your tent here. So that's why I think this is going to be kind of interesting.
And, you know, Trump's instincts have always been to double down on his base and to really, you know, rile up and try and energize MAGA rather than reach out. And it has worked for, it did work for him in 2016. It hasn't really worked for him since. So we'll see. When we come back, is Florida still competitive in presidential races? But here in Florida, it's not just the GOP primary that lacks any drama this year. The entire presidential race looks like it just might skip Florida as the state trends red and looks increasingly uncompetitive. John, you've been doing some reporting on this. Are we going to see much of Trump and Biden in Florida this year?
Well, the numbers suggest that they won't be here much. And the numbers I'm referring to are registered voters. You see, Republicans now have 850,000 more registered voters in Florida than Democrats. That's a stunning margin. That is the largest either party has held since 1988. When hard to remember this, but Democrats once were the far and away dominant party among registered voters in the state. That's a historic, almost four decade high watermark when it comes to the margin of difference. So for Biden, the Democrat, the question is, you know, why bother spending money in Florida on staff, TV appearances, or, you know, even personal appearances, if it's so likely to go for Trump who seemingly can already count the state's 30 electoral votes on his side. You know, for Trump, there are also better battlegrounds to go to where, you know, maybe an appearance may sway some voters. It's easy for Republicans to think that they've got Florida in their column at this point. So that would seem to suggest not a lot of campaign activity. You know, the deep reddening of Florida is remarkable since Republicans only took the lead over Democrats in 2021 when it comes to having the greater number of registered voters. Florida had been Democratic dominated, at least among voters, you know, although maybe not in its elected officials. But voter wise, this has been a Democratic state with a plurality of registered voters since the Reconstruction era of the late 1800s. So, you know, things have changed here. This was once the nation's biggest presidential battleground, a real toss-up that was best evidenced by George W. Bush's 537-vote victory here in the year 2000. But, you know, since Trump in 2016, the state has changed. And when you ask about campaigning, Trump will come here, I guess, because it's home for him. And he can guarantee an ego-satisfying, adoring crowd in much of Florida, and he clearly needs that. And Florida will also remain a source of donors for him and for Biden, too. But I think Trump, too, would be wise to be campaigning elsewhere. So, you know, he's got to find a state that he's got to win and go there. That giant lead that Republicans have in Florida among voters suggests Trump won't have to work very hard here. You know, it's remarkable, though, as a solace for the Democrats might be that in 1988, when the Democrats led the voter rolls by 850,000 voters, the presidential winner that year, George H.W. Bush, the Republican, who swamped Democrat Mike Dukakis, who carried only one Florida county, Gadsden. So strange things can happen, you know, Joe Biden.
That is pretty interesting. And, you know, It's fascinating to see those numbers because we're so used to Democrats having a voter registration advantage. And then in the last couple of years, Republicans have overtaken them. But even when Democrats had a voter registration advantage, they really struggled here in Florida. They couldn't win governor's races. And Obama was really the only one who was able to carry the state at the presidential level. So when you see this Republican advantage and you're getting close to a million voter registration advantage over Democrats, it seems hard to believe that if Democrats had a hard time carrying the state when they had a registration advantage, that they're going to do any better when they're down by almost a million voters.
Yeah. And the red wash of the state is such that, you know, now only 11 of the 67 counties have more Democratic registrations than Republicans right now. So that's a distinct minority.
Yeah, and DeSantis, you know, he carried Miami-Dade, he carried Palm Beach County, he carried some of these counties that have been blue for a long time. So if that continues, it looks like it's probably going to be a cakewalk for Trump here in Florida. And the issue also becomes is if it doesn't look competitive, then Democrats at the national level won't invest in the state, and it kind of builds on itself. You know, if you don't invest in the state, if you're not trying to push voter turnout, then you're going to lose by an even bigger margin. And then the state looks even more out of reach. And then you don't invest even more because you've lost by such a big margin, which I think is partly what happened with DeSantis's massive reelection win in 2022. It's Democrats didn't do the normal things to turn out voters. And we'll see if that happens this cycle. It could make Florida look even redder than it actually is. Coming up next, Moms for Liberty continues to wield clout in Florida. Well, as Florida trends red, a right-wing moms group continues to gain influence over everything from ethics complaints to training librarians. Moms for Liberty looked like its influence might be waning after one of its founders, Bridget Ziegler, was caught up in a sex scandal. But members of the group keep popping up in key positions of power. John, the Ziegler scandal seems to be just a road bump for one of Florida's most high-profile new political groups.
Yeah, it really does. You know, for a while there, it looked like, you know, the moms had met their match. But the Ziegler case, it did cost Bridget's husband, Christian, his job as chair of the Florida Republican Party, even though he was not criminally charged in the complaint that was brought by a woman who accused him of sexually assaulting her. And Bridget, who had left Moms for Liberty, but is sort of a, you know, a founding icon of the organization, she acknowledged having three-way sex with the woman and her husband, and the calls for her ouster from the Sarasota School Board have been relentless. But Bridget is still serving. And the Ziegler situation, though, did seem to rattle the moms for a while. And the Republican ecosystem, though, is sticking with them. You know, when the Department of Education under Governor Ron DeSantis formed a six-person working group to come up with an online training program for school librarians to comply with, you know, the new state law that has so many book challenges across the state. Well, three of the six members are Moms for Liberty members. And this comes even as, you know, there's been a rising pushback, even in some Republican circles, against the wide array of books that have been removed from library shelves for further review. But, you know, stocking this book training panel with moms isn't the only prominence that they're now getting. The organization's co-chairman, that's Tina Deskovich, she also is going to be a member of the State Ethics Commission appointed by DeSantis. And while she failed to be confirmed by the Florida Senate this spring, amid an ethics complaint about her lobbying the legislature, she kind of looks certain to remain on the board for at least another year. You know, the moms are, you know, a polarizing group, but there's a lot of them and they're loud and they're a national organization. You know, started here in Florida, but now in 45 states and frequently fighting teacher unions, which is a big foe of the Republican Party. There's also no coincidence that they were formed after the 2020 presidential election, when President Trump lost his reelection campaign, largely on losing the votes of thousands of suburban women who were uneasy with him as a person and as a politician. But, you know, now with Trump back as the Republican nominee, reaching out to and kind of rallying these suburban women to his side remains a priority for the party. And this nominally nonpartisan Moms for Liberty is a tool in activating suburban women to conservative causes. You know, a central theme of the moms, the so-called happy warriors, is fear. You know, fear that school districts, teachers, and, you know, yikes, liberals are ready to do all kinds of bad things to their children, you know, from acknowledging that LGBTQ students exist to discussing matters of sexuality, you know, maybe sort of like what the Zieglers did. But the Republican establishment isn't abandoning moms despite their troubled times. And instead, the party seems to be doubling down on the potential influence as the next presidential race begins to take shape. So, you know, in their own way, they're kind of a bridge between Trump world and suburbia, which, you know, still may have some hesitancy about going another round with Trump, the party's nominee.
Yeah. And you mentioned Trump world. I think a big part of their power here in Florida, though, is DeSantis. They seem to have just really closely aligned themselves with him. And, you know, even though you have one of these founders, Bridget Ziegler, you know, getting wrapped up in this scandal, she hadn't been that active in the group for a while. The members, the leaders who are very active, like Tina Deskovich, you know, they're very tight with DeSantis and they're very politically savvy. You know, they really have done a lot to develop a network in Florida politics. And it seems like this group, as long as DeSantis continues to favor them, is going to continue to have quite a bit of clout here in Florida. Well, we'll move on to some numbers. Antonio, you want to tell us about yours?
Yeah, mine is 23, and it relates to the fact that today is United Nations International Day of Happiness. So let me wish you all a happy Happiness Day. So in this, as part of the Happiness Day observations, the UN agency and a couple other research partners have issued a report saying that the United States ranks 23rd among people who feel happy with their lives. And that kind of coincides a little bit with a report came out this week, a poll by Florida Atlantic University and Main Street Research, that generally found that, you know, people across the country and in Florida are generally happy, but there's this major fault line in that people over the age of 50 register much higher levels of happiness, and people within the ages of 18 and 34 in particular are very unhappy, very discontented. And of course, that makes some sense given what we've been reporting about happening with, for example, housing costs and monumental student loan debt. You know, the 18 to 34 generation is also the one that's grown up in the era of mass shootings, in particular in schools. So, and they're the ones that younger generations are also more concerned about climate change. But the interesting thing here, which is the political ramifications, that younger voters in this FAU Main Street poll who are unhappy said that they were more leaning to vote for Donald Trump, while older people who are happy were more leaning toward Joe Biden, which kind of flips the script that we've been hearing about. We've been hearing so much about older populations, for example, in the villages being staunchly in the MAGA Trump world, whereas the feeling has been that younger voters, because the Democrats have so the narrative, at least so-called more popular positions on climate change and on, you know, the gun safety laws, they would attract more young voters. But if this poll is correct, it's actually flipping the other way around, which means that in November, in the 2024 election, there may be a different axiom. If you recall, almost, you know, 30 years ago, the axiom was it's the economy. 20 years ago, it was the values voters. Well, in 2024, it may just be it's happiness, stupid.
Yeah, and it's an interesting poll because on the surface, it seems a little fuzzy, maybe a little squishy, measuring happiness and how that plays into politics. But you make a really good point. I mean, a lot of politics is about, you know, how content you are and how discontented the public is. And so maybe this could be a pretty good indicator of where the election is going. John, you want to tell us about your number?
Yeah, Zach, I came in with that 12, and we were talking about the changing political profile of Florida, where Democrats are so diminished heading into this presidential year. If you need no further proof, how about this statistic? In 12 of Florida's 67 counties, there are more no-party affiliated voters than Democrats. That's another not good sign for Florida Democrats. Basically, these 12 counties where Democrats are beat out by Republicans and by NPAs, they're mostly heavy Republican-leaning counties, places including Clay and Nassau in suburban Jacksonville, Collier and Lee counties in southwest Florida, Panhandle counties, Bay, Walton, and Santa Rosa. You kind of get the idea. These are counties where Republicans so dominate that Democrats can't even make it as a, you know, second choice of voters who choose no party at all. Across the state, though, these no party affiliated voters, though, are going to play a big role in the next election. Where they end up, you know, will probably decide the state. They're 26% of the Florida electorate, and both parties need them. But the fact that NPAs are such a potent force in these red-leaning counties, maybe that suggests that a lot of these voters also lean conservative by their location in Florida, you know, which that may not be a promising sign for the Biden administration as it hopes to at least, you know, kind of hold down the overall margin of what at this stage appears to be a likely defeat in Florida by Trump who looks ready to capture the electoral votes just like he did in 16 and 20.
Yeah, and it's also not a promising sign, John, for the value of our primary elections when you have so many people registering as NPA and the number of Republicans and Democrats, the share going down, the primaries become just more and more just the hardcore of the hardcore and not necessarily representing the public at large. Well, my number is 1,358. That's how many people are facing charges for their involvement in the storming of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 2021. At one point, Florida had more January 6th defendants than any other state, and Florida also had the most Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, two far-right extremist groups that were charged with crimes related to January 6th. You know, that day continues to loom large in the nation's consciousness, and it continues to loom large on the campaign trail, where it really has become a major issue that Trump is really trying to rewrite the script on. You know, even though there are many January 6th defendants who are accused of assaulting police officers, and there's ample video evidence of how violent that day was, Trump continues to go and call these defendants hostages and patriots. The latest example came over the weekend, where he had a rally in Ohio, where he started the rally by saluting. He put his hand up to the brim of a red MAGA hat and saluted while the J6 prison choir, a recording of a group of January 6th defendants singing the national anthem, played before this Trump rally. And Trump has really incorporated this J6 prison choir into his rally routine. He actually used the recording during his first rally of the presidential campaign in Waco, Texas, and has played it at some of his rallies since then. This has become sort of a central part of his effort to try and rewrite history, to try and diminish what happened on January 6th and change the narrative around it. Trump has proven over the years that he has a talent for taking some of his biggest weaknesses and turning them into strengths, whether it's his proclivity for, breaking the norms in politics and saying things that are outside of the bounds, and people have his supporters have come to celebrate that as part of his political incorrectness, or the 91 felony charges that he faces. He's used some political jujitsu and turned that into a persecution, and his poll numbers have actually gone up, and he's trying to do the same thing here with January 6th. And I've talked to voters, Haley voters and others, who really say that January 6th was a breaking point for him. And it could be and a reason that they won't vote for Trump. And it could be one of the big decisive issues in this election, as it should be. It was a major moment in American history, and it's an important part of Trump's legacy. And whether Trump can change people's minds about that could go a long way into deciding whether he wins this election. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our production guru, Rob Landers. Thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.